Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, January 4th. I'm Ray Graff. With most schools on winter break now, planning for college is the focus of today's program. Also, just yesterday, Governor Cuomo announced a free tuition plan for New York public colleges. Certified educational planner Linnell Engelmeyer is in the studio this afternoon to talk more about it. As many of us have found, securing an acceptance letter to an institution of higher learning, often only half the battle. The other half involves finding the educational funding you will need to fund your educational experience. We'll learn much more about that. We'll take your calls today. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Linnell Engelmeyer and your calls coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Linnell Engelmeyer joins us this afternoon. She is a certified educational planner with more than 20 years of experience in college admissions and financial aid. Currently has her own college counseling practice. Linnell volunteers to work with underrepresented students through a local and a national not-for-profit and is the author of a college admission and financial aid workbook entitled Moving Forward, What Teens and Parents Need to Know in the Years Leading to College. Linnell Engelmeyer, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Ray. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. The number to call is 800-348-2551. That's 800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. That's voxpop@wamc.org. But the phone number here, if you have a question, is 800-348-2551. Well, I guess the big bombshell yesterday, Governor Cuomo announced a plan to offer free tuition at New York public colleges to eligible residents. The governor's plan would provide free tuition to a SUNY or a CUNY college, including two-year community colleges, for residents whose families earn less than $125,000. Nothing official yet, but something of an earthquake in the biz, eh?
I would say so.
So what do you make of that?
You know, I would say that my position is that I'm cautiously optimistic and deferring further comment until we all have a little more information.
Well, you know, that's not a lot of fun.
I could try to say something a little more divisive.
That's it. That's what we're looking for.
You know, it's, and I think that the reaction to it so far, I've seen things on both sides of the fence, from people who laud it and think it's wonderful to other people. I saw one comment this morning. Somebody said, you know, I'm happy to pay for my own two kids to go to college, but I am not paying for other people's children.
Well, we've heard that argument, and I think somebody called in during Vox Pop when Alan and Blair Horner were on yesterday and said, boy, what happened? I put my kids through college, and now it's going to be free for them? So, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. My take on that is that I really wonder if we had more information available to us and could do some, like, longitudinal analysis of it. You know, with a college education come decreases in certain other expenditures, such as reliance on certain types of public assistance and unemployment compensation and things like that. And so I would really love to know, for the amount of money that they're talking about that this is going to cost, I believe there will be some other savings in other places that at this point will be very hard to quantify, but I'd love to see how much more it really is.
Well, it's not official yet, so we'll have plenty of time to parse that. This one came in via email from Jen, who says the subject heading is Private College Merit and Grants Received, and Jen writes, upon acceptance to a private college, student receives a financial aid package which may include merit scholarships and grants, with the caveat blank college reserves the right to adjust your aid package based on new information regarding your outside resources of aid, such as other scholarships you may apply for and receive not associated with that college. Outside scholarships will be allowed to go against your unmet need, which for us will not exist. So this seems to discourage applying for outside scholarships, which seems very unfair, seems like bait and switch. Is there a way around this, or a way to determine exactly how any outside scholarships will be calculated against your merit scholarships and grants? And that's from Jen. Very detailed question.
It is a detailed question, but it's actually a really great question. And it's one that I see a lot with the not-for-profit students that I work with. They are very low-income, very high-achieving students, and they tend to come with a lot of outside scholarship money.
Yeah.
And the answer is, if she lined up 10 different schools and asked them their policies, she might get 5 different answers to that question. And so a lot of it is institution-specific. Some schools, particularly the Ivies put their policy right on their website. If your outside scholarships exceed your need, here is what happens. And they give you several steps or iterations that you would go through before the institution would actually start to decrease their own funding.
Mm-hmm.
The other side of that spectrum is I've worked with a school that is not in New York or anywhere close that does not meet full need. And the minute you get an outside scholarship, reduces their own institutional funding. So they don't let you even go up to meeting full needs. So it really depends on the institution. One of the things that I've been able to do with some of our not-for-profit students is increase their budget for travel expenses because many of them go great distances from home. And if you're from Kansas and your school on the East Coast gives you $900 in travel expenses, that's not enough for probably two round-trip airfares.
Mm-hmm.
And so often we've been able to go back to that school and say, could you at least increase the student's budget to accommodate for X, Y, or Z that might be exceptional expenditures for this student, and then let the scholarship money go towards meeting that increased need. It is kind of a specific question, but it is encountered more often than you would think.
Hmm.
And so it's a good question. What I would encourage Jen to do is first comb each website, each college's website, and usually financial aid falls under the admissions section of the website, and make pretty copious notes because, again, you might go to five schools and find five different responses. Think about some of the other expenses that you'll incur. If there's anything exceptional, I would share that with the college and ask them, can the outside scholarship money go towards meeting need? But to be quite honest, I've had cases there's a young woman at Harvard right now, and I said to her, stop applying for outside scholarships because you're taking the money away from maybe a small local organization, and basically your Ivy League institution is taking its own funding back. And do you really want to do that? And so I just told her stop. But that doesn't happen that often.
Linnell Engelmeyer is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Robert in Deerfield. Robert, you're first.
Thanks so much. I'm a single dad. I am 69. I have two sons in private school, one going off to college in September. Last year, I had an income of $90,000, but that's going down very quickly to $70,000 by 2017 as a result of a loss of a 10-year annuity and loss of Social Security for my son. My older boy turns 18 and graduates from high school in this May. Also, my older boy has been accepted to a university out of the country to study economics overseas. It's a really tremendous opportunity, but they don't provide a lot of financial aid. Probably not very much at all, if any. So I'm going to be looking to private scholarships. Any suggestions about? I have limited. I only have about $15,000, $14,000 in the college fund, which I put together $100 a month over the good number of years. I'm happy I have that, but that gets us through maybe a semester,
right?
Part of a semester, and expenses are not just tuition, of course, as you know, but overseas one has to cook his own meals. And there's a lot of extra money that he needs in his pocket to
Robert,
survive there.
Can I ask you a question? Is the country of the institution Germany by any chance?
No, it's in Scotland.
Okay. There are a couple things that I would do. I'm assuming that with that, he's probably also applying to some U.S. institutions. Is that correct?
To which institutions? I'm sorry?
In this country, in the United States.
He's applied to a couple here. Yes, he has.
Okay. So a couple of things. Number one, as far as outside scholarships go, most of my students just use the web to search for them. There are scholarship search databases like FastWeb, F as in Frank, A, S as in Sam, T as in Thomas, W-E-B. And it's just a scholarship search database. You key in some information about yourself. It tells you some scholarships to look for or that might be appropriate for you. What I would say is he needs to be doing that immediately because a lot of those deadlines either are upon us or maybe even some that have passed. So I would certainly do that with all due speed. I would check with the high school guidance office since they tend to be a good resource of local scholarships.
That's good.
Number two. And then number three, which is really only appropriate for institutions within the United States, is new this year, and I think that you're probably the first time this topic will come up this hour and probably not the last, but new this year, they've redone the filing deadlines for financial aid. It used to be that you could not apply for financial aid for your son, who's a senior, until after January 1st of the year in which he will start college. So for you, January 1st, you know, three, 4 days ago. They have changed that, and they have now backed that deadline up to October 1st. You may start applying. So October 1st, 2016, in the case of your son. And what they have done in order to accommodate that, because obviously your 2016 taxes aren't done yet, is they've now gone to my favorite phrase in the whole world, which is you now use the tax information from the prior year, or PPY, which is essentially, to the rest of us, 2 years ago. So 2015. And so you, when you apply for financial aid for him, are using 2015's tax return.
Correct.
If 2015's tax return is not your current reality, what I would encourage you to do is fill out the FAFSA, the Free Application for Federal Student Aid, using exactly what they tell you, which is 2015, but then write a letter to the schools in question explaining to the schools that what you put for 2015 is not your current reality, and on such and such a date, your son lost, you know, the Social Security benefit and you lost the annuity, and give them the dates and the dollar amounts and ask them to make what is called a professional judgment change. So the people at the FAFSA, like, nobody there is making a professional judgment change. They're basically just doing, you know, data entry and data calculation. The school can make
the individual schools make these judgments.
The school financial aid office can make the change. If you need to fill out the CSS profile, which is that supplemental financial aid application, there's also a again, give them what they ask for, but there's also a box on there that basically asks for any additional information, and you can also put your statement in that box as well.
Perfect.
All right. Hey, Robert, thanks a lot for the
call. That's very helpful.
Appreciate the call. Linnell Engelmeyer is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Preservation League of New York State, offering EPIP, a revolving loan program to acquire, stabilize, and restore historic buildings in New York. PreserveNYS.org. Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York, a country store since 1923, offering aged cheddar cheeses, nostalgic candies, New York products and gifts. WaterwheelVillage.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York, working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding, web design and development, and graphic design for almost three decades. ShannonRose.com. And Hudson Wine Merchants, a wine and spirits boutique in the heart of Hudson, New York. Curbside service and delivery available. Hudson Wine Merchants, raise your glass. HudsonWines.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Our number is 800-348-2551. We talk with certified educational planner Linnell Engelmeyer from time to time, and this is that time. It's our first one for 2017, and over to the phones we go. Linda in Clifton Park. Linda, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I would just like to make two comments, and I actually do work in higher ed. The first comment is regarding free tuition.
Yeah.
I guess I have a real concern about it because I see all too often kids not succeeding. So, I mean, is the government just going to pay for someone to go to college and then they not succeed? I think it. I think folks won't be as motivated now, so they can say, "Hey, I got free tuition. I can give this a shot. It doesn't cost me anything." So that's my first point, and my concern is because there are many students who do not succeed. And
succeed in college or succeed in life after college? Define.
Well, I'm talking about college.
Okay.
I'm talking about how many kids actually get through it.
Well,
so now the government has said, I'm going to pay for you to do this. what happens when they don't succeed?
Well, I think that there's still going to be academic standards that you have to reach, as I understand it.
Yeah, and you know, one of my thoughts, Linda, is that this could actually make some of the SUNYs more selective, because it of course makes them more appealing because of the price, and so you still have to meet the admission standards to get in. The people that I feel badly for are the people making $130,000 who come just above this cutoff. Or me,
who's paid for three kids to go to college.
Yeah, we've been hearing that quite a bit.
I never had that opportunity.
But you know what? Hopefully, their children will benefit from that.
Yeah, but I don't think the admission standards necessarily mean that, you know, the students are going to see. You have to look at how many people actually get through the program in a SUNY school. What are the percentages?
I'll tell you, my favorite statistics to look at, and what I quote often to my students, are the retention and graduation rates of the school. There's a school, again, not in New York, but their six-year graduation rate, which is the graduation rate that the federal government asks them to report, their six-year graduation rate is 41%. If you said to me, write an out-of-state tuition check for $40,000, $50,000 to this place with a six-year graduation rate of 41%, I'd be super hard-pressed to do it. So I do think there are some ways to do that. I mean, what you're talking about is a legitimate concern. The flip side to that is that studies show, return on investment shows, that kids with some college still fare better in the course of their lives economically than kids with no college. I'm not advocating for it, but that's just sort of the flip side of the argument.
Mm-hmm. I guess I see all too often students with Pell Grants who don't succeed. So, you know, it's a frustration on my end, because, you know, I sometimes wonder where the motivation is. And the second point I would like to make is, I think our schools are not doing enough to make sure that kids should be going to college and finding alternatives for kids who maybe shouldn't be going to college. Because, again, there are too many kids going to college who have no business in college. It's just not the right place for them.
Well, I don't disagree with you on that one at all. And are some, you know, there are plenty of people out there who go to college because that's sort of culturally what we dictate, but who would do incredibly well, in life and financially from learning a skill or a trade. And so, you know, I don't necessarily disagree. I think there's some merit to that argument.
Linda, thank you for the call. Number is 800-348-2551. You know, we booked this show a long time ago, and Linnell, in a way, I'll have to apologize, because I sense a trend here, and a lot of this will be about Governor Cuomo's announcement yesterday. But if you're out there and you do have a question about financial aid and funding college, that is what Linnell knows best. But if you want to talk about the governor's idea, that's also good. Let's go to line two, and Mark in South Fallsburg. Mark.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
Good. My point is I'm sorry about all these funding programs, but my feeling is, if you're going to offer free tuition, it's for all. Even me at 58 years old, if I choose to go back to college, they're going to give me a one-shot deal. If I blow it, tough luck, buddy. You're paying if you want to come back. Hmm. But everybody should get it, not just you because you make too little, or you because.
Mark, interestingly enough, the first caller indicated that their child had an offer to go to college abroad. And in Germany, and I don't know if this is true for all institutions in Germany, but I know there are certainly several where it's free, and it's free for American students going to school in Germany.
Huh.
And so there are certainly countries that have embraced that. And have done quite well with it, and I don't disagree with you.
So it's not free for Germans?
It may well be free for Germans, but I do know that they're trying hard to diversify their student population, and for Americans going there, it is free for 4 years.
I'll be darned. Well, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Now, you mentioned that the financial aid deadline has now been pushed back to October as opposed to early January.
Right.
Is that before you know you're in the school? Do you apply for the financial aid?
Well, you've always applied before you know if you're in. Okay. So, but what happened was, so let's say you applied early decision to Skidmore.
Right.
And
they said, no, you're destined for radio, young man.
So let's say it's your wife then.
All right. Somebody smart. In other words. Okay.
So,
all right. Good
so,
point.
So she applies early. And she can, because she'll now find out in the middle of December, they need to give her some type of an indicator as to whether she can afford this. So previously, she could apply for an estimated financial aid package and get an estimated package in the middle of December when she gets her acceptance letter. You then had to update all of your information based on that current year's tax information. So it was almost like applying for financial aid twice. Not quite twice, but almost twice. What has happened now with the backing up of the deadline is you apply once using real numbers from the prior year, and they do not change. So when you apply early action or early decision somewhere and you get that acceptance letter, you get a real financial aid package that goes with it that is not an estimate that will not get adjusted unless something changes.
Here's where my cynicism creeps in. If I'm running a for-profit university and I see X student with X grades and X CV and all these great things, and then who needs a lot of financial aid, and Y student who has the same grades, same extracurriculars, same intangibles, who doesn't need any financial aid in October, I'm going to go for the one who makes us more money.
Well, and I can't promise you that that is isolated to for-profit schools. I mean, if you are a not-for-profit school, you still have to pay the bills. And, you know, all other things being equal, you know how much money you have to spend per student. And factored into that, you need a couple of full pays every year.
Yeah.
And so does that sway them?
Should it? In other words, is that ethical?
In my idealistic world, no, it certainly should not. And there are some schools that won't look at that at all. I think a lot of schools will tell you that they make their decision independent of your ability to pay.
Is there a firewall between the departments?
No. In fact, on the common application, which is the most commonly used admissions application, there is a question that says, will you be applying for financial aid? Now, when you say to them, if I say yes on that, is it going to hurt me? Their response is always, no, we do that for your protection to make sure that we're informing you of financial aid deadlines and keeping on you about submitting all the paperwork so that you don't miss anything.
Okay.
But can I promise you without a question of a doubt that that's never going to happen? I'd like to say it's not.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. That's as far as we'll go with this interrogation. It's 800-348-2551. Sherelle, you're on with Linnell Engelmeyer.
Hey. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Well, I tell you what, I'm 65, and it took me 10 years to go to college, and only because of the grace of the SUNY system was I able to get a BA.
Okay,
so I totally agree. Whatever age you are, if you are just capped out financially, then yes, I think it's a great thing.
Okay.
I would love to go back and get a graduate degree right now, and I'm looking at least $100,000.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's no free tuition for graduate school. But I went to SCCC. I got myself a degree in paralegal, and it cost me, but you know, I got the degree. Free would have been better. I would have done the same amount because I'm one of these Midwestern workaholic types.
Yeah.
but I really think Governor Cuomo and President Obama, they're right on with that score.
Well,
you know, it's not just the kids graduating right now. It's people like me who, it took me 10 years because I worked.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
No, I get it.
And
yeah.
I just...
All right. Well, thank you. Sherelle, thank you very much for the call. We got to move it along here, but I appreciate that. Regina in Albany. Regina, you're on.
Hi. I'm curious. I just tuned in, so maybe you've answered this already. We have two daughters. One is 9 years older than the second. And our first daughter got through school. And at that time, we had been, you know, paying into the California Scholar Share. We had 529Bs for her. And now our second daughter, who's going to SUNY Platt, is also in the same situation. You know, my husband and I started saving when she was little, so we can get her through school. But suddenly there are all these restrictions on the kind of things that you can withdraw money from your 529B to pay for. Like, I remember when our eldest daughter was going.
Did we lose you? Are you still there?
I was my navigator. But the question is, what laws changed such that we can't, you know, we can't withdraw money to buy her a school computer? Everything's been in sort of tramped down on, I guess, is what I want to say.
Okay.
And so how do you, like, oh, hell.
Oh, okay. I think we get
maybe
the point.
Maybe you can answer the question.
Yeah. And it's a good one. I'm actually, my disclaimer is that I'm always, I'm not a financial planner. And so when you talk about 529B, we have 529s for our own children. And actually, my experience has been just the opposite, that as of, I think it was last year, it might be the year before that, so I'm not 100% sure on my years, but you can now use your 529 money to buy your child a computer. In fact, one of the things I found out last year was that if you have a child who is a music major and needs a new musical instrument, you can use your 529 money, I believe, for that musical instrument if it is an integral part of their education. And again, I'm not a financial planner, but I actually have looked up the computer one. I've looked that up
for
myself.
Your own. Yeah.
Because we made our daughter wait until we could use the 529
right.
money. So that's been my experience. And when you're talking about a 529B, perhaps that's something that I'm not as familiar with. But I know that they have actually opened it up a little bit more for a regular 529.
And always good to talk to your financial planner and who will have the latest information on all that. So thank you very much for that call. And over to Natalie in Charlton. Natalie, you're on.
Good afternoon. I'm wondering if you have any suggestions about how to get my son through medical school. He has just been accepted to SUNY Downstate Medical College, and we'd really prefer not to have him in loans up to his eyebrows. And is there any place I should be looking to try to find something other than loans?
So there are,
it being a SUNY school.
Yeah, there are very few. When it comes to medical school that I am aware of, and usually the ones that I am aware of are loan forgiveness programs. So, for example, when your son finishes medical school, he can go to an underserved community, and they will then erase a portion of his loans based on time served. But as for scholarship or grant money, very, very little of it available as far as I'm aware.
Okay. Now, with what programs for the underserved, because that is the type of thing he would like to do.
I have to tell you, because I dabble in that very, very occasionally, you'd probably get more specific information out of just doing a search for, medical school and loan forgiveness.
Okay, very good.
Well, congratulations,
thank you so much,
Natalie. That's great news, and we appreciate it. Over to, who's been waiting longest here? Let's go to Janice. Janice, where are you calling from?
Galway.
Oh, well, you're on the air with Linnell Engelmeyer.
Thank you so much. One of my six kids is 25. He's gone back to school, and he's going to Fort Collins in Colorado. So he's paying out-of-state tuition. And because he turned 25 in November, I believe this year's FAFSA has to be off his own income. It no longer can reflect our
correct
W-2s.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, so how does he do his FAFSA? Like, now I found out just today, listen to you, that it should have been started maybe in October. Until he gets his taxes done, when he gets his W-2s and can go do his taxes in Colorado, how could he do his FAFSA early if he has nothing to reflect back on? Because I remember he's one of six kids. I remember from before, it was always like referring to your tax,
right.
Like line 42. And it was so easy because you could do that. So what does he do since He has nothing from the past to reflect on.
So a couple of things, and you actually raise a question that I haven't encountered yet, which I'll tell you in a second. But in order to determine a student's dependency, there are roughly six questions that the student answers right at the beginning of the FAFSA. And one of them is, you know, are you a veteran of the U.S. Armed Forces? Do you have children other of your own? Another one is, were you born before whatever the date is that makes him 24, 25 years old? And he's going to say yes to that. And after that,
right,
it will then wipe out the questions that involve you and leave only the questions that are geared directly towards him. So it will do that part of it automatically. The interesting thing is that 2 years ago, in 2015, which is the tax year he should be using, he, of course, was not a dependent student or an independent student. He was a dependent student.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the part where I'm not exactly sure what they're going to tell him to do. But the other thing that happens is it says to you, one of the questions it asks is this tax information from an actual tax return? And if yes, which one? Is it a full 1040? Is it a 1040A or EZ? Or is this information based on an estimated return? So he can always just check the box that says this information is based on an estimated return. Then when he finishes his return, he's just responsible for going back in and making the edits to update it. And then the other thing, finally, is that I just want to clarify a comment that I made that I probably should, which is that it used to be that you couldn't file before January 1st. That's when it opened. So now October 1st is when it opens. That doesn't mean that that's the deadline.
Yeah.
It just means that's when you can start. I think most schools' deadlines are probably not going to change that much. They might back up a little bit. Really, who this benefits are the early action, early decision applicants.
Okay. All right. So therefore, if he waits till he gets his W-2 from his work in Colorado, goes to a tax person there, gets his forms, and then signs on a FAFSA, which might be by then early February, that won't be a problem?
So it's probably not a problem, but what I would do is I would go to the website of the institution, of the college, look on their financial aid section, and see, is he already out there now at school?
Yes, but he's right now he's home in Galway for Christmas.
But he's enrolled there already.
He's been attending for a few years
already. So specifically what he wants to do is he wants to look at the financial aid filing deadline for returning students, because that's usually a slightly later deadline than first-time freshmen.
All right, Janice, hey, thanks a lot for the call. And our number is 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Nine Pin Cider Works, hard cider made from locally sourced apples. Tasting room Wednesday through Sunday, 929 Broadway, Albany. Drink New York apples, ninepincider.com. The 1850 House and Tavern, now serving dinner at 4 p.m. The1850house.com or 845-658-7800. Capital Roots, working to help people in the Capital Region access healthy, affordable, and local food. Grow, educate, provide. CapitalRoots.org for information on how to support. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York. Working on land protection projects that safeguard the water quality of Lake George. Get more info, hiking maps, public events, and more at lglc.org. And Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York. Specializing in wine and craft spirits for more than 15 years, stocking single malts, bourbons, tequilas, and gins. GrapesandGrainsWine.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here with you, and Linnell Engelmeyer is our guest. 800-348-2551. Janine in Scaticoke, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. My question is, when you're trying to do early decision versus early action, how do you know you're going to be able to commit if you haven't seen a financial aid package? My son is the first, so I haven't a clue what I'm doing.
Is
there a good written resource so that we can educate ourselves on how this rolls?
First question, is your son a senior right now?
No, he is a junior.
Okay. Okay, so your question's a really, really good one. And, you know, part of the problem with early decision, which is binding, as opposed to early action, where you apply early, but it is not binding. So if you apply early action and you get in somewhere, you still have until May 1st to make that decision and deposit to a school. If you apply early decision somewhere and you are accepted, you are telling that school, if you accept me, I am coming. It is, it's a
regardless
binding
of whether or not we see a financial aid package.
Well,
because that's the other part I hear, which is don't rule out your private schools such as Cornell.
Right. So,
because they'll come back with more money, and it could actually end up being cheaper than a SUNY school.
So it can, and I have seen that happen. Cheaper than a SUNY school does not happen all that often, full disclosure, but it does happen. Here's what normally happens with early decision. And that is there are some schools, and again, unfortunately, there's not a universal answer to this. There are some schools who will say early decision is binding as long as you can afford it. So if we give you a financial aid package back that is not affordable to you, then obviously we can't hold you to it and it's not binding. The flip side to that is I have heard other schools say, if you don't know if you can afford it, then you probably shouldn't be applying early decision. Mm. So,
Okay, good to know.
But I will give you a resource that is, it's probably my favorite repository for financial aid information. I don't think I've ever not found anything on there, and I look for a lot of minutia. And the website is FinAid, F as in Frank, I, N as in Nancy, A, I, D as in David, .org, finaid.org. What I would suggest to you is that on that homepage, when you first go to the website, there's a link called calculators. Then on
called what? I'm sorry?
Calculators.
Calculators.
Oh, calculators. Okay.
Yes.
And then on that next page, there are a whole slew of calculators. The one kind of near the top of the page says expected family contribution and financial aid calculator. It's all one. And what that is that is basically a dummy of the financial aid form. So you could take your information right now today, that. Your numbers don't go anywhere. You're not sharing your information with anybody, but it will give you a very, very good proximity of what the both the FAFSA and the CSS profile will expect that your family can pay towards your son's education. So it may come back with a number that you say, all right, you know, that's a little painful, but we could get there. Alternately, it may come back with a number that you find staggering and completely unrealistic.
Yeah.
In any case, it helps you to gauge appropriately where your family sits financially. And truthfully, I like this website's calculator or the expected family contribution calculator better than I like the calculators on the college's own websites. Each college is required to have a calculator on their own website, which tells you how much you input some basic information, and then it says to you, here's how much you're likely to have to pay. It doesn't compare that with what the FAFSA thinks you can pay. So it's a great comparison tool.
And it's finaid.org. All right. Our guest today is Lynell Engelmeyer, 800-348-2551. Let's go to Mary Lou in Bennington. Hello, Mary Lou. You're on.
Hi. My question is on loan forgiveness for state and municipal employees. I guess I was ignorant in the fact that I didn't realize you had to do a special consolidation to start with. So after 10 years of paying, I've been looking into it and find out that my loans don't qualify. I have two consolidation loans and a parent plus loan.
Okay, and I have to say that is something that I would actually have to look up, and dutifully I would go to finaid.org and in the little search box type loan consolidation and see what you get out of that.
Consolidation or forgiveness?
I got the impression I have to consolidate now.
And forgiveness. I apologize. Look up loan forgiveness. And you may have to call your loan servicer as well.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Okay, I guess I've already done that, and I still wasn't totally clear.
Yeah, I apologize. I don't. I would actually have to do some digging on that one.
Oh, I stumped you.
You did stump
well
me.
Well done, Mary Lou. Thank you for being here.
Well, I have to say, I was so impressed with everything she knows. So thank you very much.
Sorry about that.
She knows a lot, but there are limits to everything. All right, let's go to Tristan in Cooperstown. Tristan, you're on with Lynn L. Engelmeyer.
Hello, all. It's good to be with you today. So I just have one quick point and then two very related questions. My first point, a few callers ago, you had someone ask about medical school and loan forgiveness and scholarships. Mm-hmm. And I would say that the best source for those would be the Indian Health Service provides a lot of funding if you partner with one of their reservations or communities for young doctors. And I have some very good friends that had their medical school loans paid off by that.
Okay.
And then my two questions are, first of all, how likely is it that we will get free public undergraduate education in New York? How likely will it be passed? And second of all, I'm an undergraduate student at a private college up in upstate New York in Oneonta, at Hartwick. And I was wondering what this legislation will do to the private education industry within New York State.
I think we need a crystal ball to answer both of those questions.
Those are great questions. Let me back up. Tristan, thank you for pointing out the medical school resource. I've also known people who have had the military pay for their medical school. And so that is another way to go if people are interested in that. As far as the likelihood of it passing, let me put it to you this way. I have a 10th grader, and I'm not going to go out and spend his college savings account on a wild vacation.
No.
Quite yet. Not quite yet.
Right.
And what will it do? It's interesting. I think that there had been a shift years ago, I believe, where The public institutions, when the economy tightened up, the public institutions became so much more feasible and appealing to people that they became so much more competitive that the very students economically for who would really benefit from being at a low-cost institution had trouble getting into them and had to go look at privates.
For academic reasons?
Yeah, because they became so competitive because economically they were so appealing. Mm. And I can't help but wonder if we're going to see kind of another iteration of that.
Well, that's a great call, Tristan, and we will certainly keep our eyes on the situation. Marianne in Saratoga. Marianne, you're on.
Hi. I have a question for Lynell about the 521 College Fund. My son is 31 years old. And he never finished college. As a matter of fact, he didn't even go. But we have money in a fund for him mm-hmm. that I understand can only be used to pay for college or college expenses. Mm-hmm. Now, he is living on his own. He's out in Portland, Oregon. But he has to pay Obamacare, you know, mm-hmm. his premiums for Obamacare. And I was just wondering, because the money is his, why it's not legal for us to just use that money to pay for another government expense. And it can only, you know, how will we get that part of the 529 change so that you can use it for something else besides college if you're not going to college?
Again, it's a great, great question. You know, the only thing that I can tell you that I have found as my kids have moved closer to that age is that what is considered a college expense under 529 has become incredibly broad. And I'll give you an example. Both of my kids have done these summer programs for which they've gotten college credit.
Mm-hmm.
And people have said to me repeatedly, hey, you can use your 529 to pay for that. And, you know, they're not enrolled yet, you know. So, you know, should he go back to school or even decide to take a class, you know, at a community college, I believe he can still make use of that money. I also believe you can use the money for things other than education. The kicker is that you pay a penalty on it. That is my understanding of it. Again, you know, I'm not a financial planner.
I spoke to someone with a 529, and that's what they said. You'd have to pay a penalty.
Right.
But since he's forced to pay for, you know, his medical premiums out of his own pocket, it almost seems like, you know, he's being penalized. You know, the money is just sitting there. It's not going to be used, you know, to buy a new car or anything. It's going to be used to, you know, pay for something that the government is telling them he has
mandated.
To have.
Yeah. Right. No, I hear you.
All right, Marianne, thanks a lot for the call. This one came in via email, and then we'll get back to the phones, Linnell. This is from Joseph and Jennifer, who say, any advice for an EFC that is outrageously incorrect? No way we can come close to what the FAFSA EFC is. How do we deal with this?
That's a great question, and it's funny because whenever I tell people to do that EFC calculator that I mentioned on FinAid.org, I usually caution it with or preface it with either you need a big bowl of comfort food in front of you or a very large glass of wine, because frequently it is, you know, fabulously incompatible with
reality,
and not because people are living, you know, these significantly overabundant lifestyles, but, you know, so depending on where you live, I work with a student who lives outside of the Bay Area. She's in a $750,000 home, but as the Bay Area goes, that's not really anything great.
Yeah.
And the rest of their financial picture is kind of bleak, and that house is killing them. So the one thing that I would encourage you to do is figure out why it's so high. In other words, like, what piece of your financial picture is skewing it so high? And if you do the calculation on that FinAid.org calculator, it gives you the option of printing out the details. And if you print out the details, you'll actually be able to identify where that big bump is coming from. If for some reason that is not an accurate indicator. So, for example, if you say to me, hey, we make a really good living, but I'm caring for my elderly mother who has very significant medical expenses not covered by insurance, and we had to put a handicapped accessible addition onto our home, I would say any kind of extenuating circumstance that paints your financial picture differently should be communicated to the financial aid office at the institution using very specific dates and dollar amounts.
Let's go back to the phones and Sharon in Schenectady. Sharon, you're on.
Hi, I'm a single mom. I put two kids through college, and they got very little financial aid. Our expected family contribution was a lot higher than I had hoped. Their grandparents did help them and at some point, but if it weren't for that, it would have been loans. They would have had much, much higher loans. As far as free education, I would love other families to not have to deal with that. I don't understand the whole, I did it, why can't everybody else? I'm willing to share. I would love to see it more affordable for other kids. My daughter would love to go to grad school, but she's afraid to because she's hearing horror stories from other kids who've gone and have even higher loans. And maybe the affordable education should be geared towards maybe years 3 and 4, 5 and 6. I could understand being motivated, having to pay for it yourself.
Yeah.
But I also think that the fear of those loans and those payments may be keeping kids from applying or going to college in the first place.
Linnell, you want to make a comment on that?
I think it was incredibly eloquently put. I don't think I have a whole lot to add.
All right, Sharon, thank you for that. 800-348-2551. Who's been waiting the longest? I think Patty in Guilderland. Patty, you're on.
Hi, I have just two quick comments. I'm 68 years old, and I was accepted to a graduate program. And I decided I misread how much it was going to cost, and it was a highly competitive program. So then when I got accepted and I started looking at the actual cost, I said, no, I really can't do this. And they said, well, just fill out FAFSA form and take out loans. And I said, I'm 68 years old. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
But the other comment that I have to make fits in very well with what Sharon just said. My son went to law school, and he worked full-time and went to law school at night. And now he has six-figure loans, and he pays on them faithfully, but they're interest only. He's getting nowhere on these loans. And I don't know how he's ever going to get them all paid back because, you know, he'll get the principal down by like $5 a month.
So, Valerie, can I
six figures.
Can I make a suggestion to you? The way that student loans have traditionally worked in the past, and I don't believe this has changed, is that if he makes any extra payment each month, so let's say, and I'm just making up numbers, let's say he has to pay $100 a month. If he pays $110 a month, he can put a note in with that check that specifies that anything in excess of the required payment is to go towards reducing principal only. You have to put the note in. But if he pays even just a couple extra bucks a month, it takes the principal down.
Okay. Well, Patty, I think that's where we will have to leave it here. I guess we're almost out of time. Shall we try to get another call in here?
Let's do one more.
All right. Let's see if we can go to, in the last 30 seconds, Irene in Rosendale. Irene.
Well, I have a question for your guest. With the two-year colleges having open enrollment, if we add free tuition to that, does your guest see any difference in the value of that two-year degree in the future? Will it seem more like a high school diploma than a college
That's
degree?
That's a good question to end on. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I will tell you that, you know, I'm not sure it can feel more like a another high school diploma anyway, because that's what people now say about college, is that it's what high school used to be.
All right, fair enough. Linnell Engelmeyer, how do people get in touch with you?
You know, I guess best way is by email, which is Engel, E-N-G-E-L, at NICAP, N-Y-C-A-P, .rr.com.
Well, Linnell, thanks for being here. Support comes from Curtis Lumber, specializing in kitchen design, featuring Cambria quartz countertops, Murillat cabinetry, and more. Designer consultations available, CurtisLumber.com. Penny Farthing Investment Management Amherst, a socially conscious, fee-only investment advisor of personal retirement and endowment portfolios, including the Bright Penny Community Strategies, brightpenny.org. And Careers in Transition LLC, Albany, Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, testing job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume, and cover letter writing, careersintransitionllc.com. Thanks again to Linnell Engelmeyer for being here. Thanks to you for listening and for the great calls. Thanks to our engineer, Zach Malloy. Carol Lapani answered the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Vox Pop, it's all about real estate. Stand by now for news.